we're diving into a story that sits right at this really intense intersection of extreme technical discipline and just overwhelming human vulnerability.
It's the journey of S. Shield Sam. He was a military veteran, a cybersecurity engineer. I mean, his whole life was built around threat assessment,
strategic defense,
yeah,
protecting systems, data,
yeah,
you know, protecting people from dangers you can't even see.
Exactly. His career was all about finding that one clear signal in a whole lot of noise. And then his wife, Patricia Vibrant, 68 years old, she starts getting forgetful.
And for him, this wasn't just the background noise of getting older.
Not at all. He recognized it immediately. It was a clear, unmistakable signal. It turned out to be mild cognitive impairment, MCI.
And what makes this so compelling is the tension in their marriage.
Yeah.
Patricia was. She was the definition of the strong, silent type, survived domestic violence, buried her own son, Choo-Choo. She never asked for help.
Ever. So Sam knew. He just knew she was going to try and carry this disease all by herself, too.
So his whole mission just pivots.
Completely. It's not about a firewall anymore. It's about protecting her dignity, her life, from a threat that's already inside. And there's this one moment. He finds her unfinished crossword puzzle.
Uh-huh.
The clue is a guardian, protector. The squares are blank. So Sam picks up the pencil, and he just writes in one word. Shield.
Wow. And that right there, that's the mission statement for this whole deep dive, isn't it? For any of you out there who get thrown into this role of caregiver, Sam's story is a roadmap. He took all that technical discipline and built a life-saving system.
It's the shortcut to being prepared. It's the Guardian's tactical toolkit.
So where does he even start? I mean, the diagnosis hits and the chaos begins.
Well, his first strategic move was admitting weakness. He enrolled in an 8-week master caregiver certification course.
Because he realized this is not intuitive.
Profoundly not intuitive. You can't just figure it out as you go. And the most freeing thing he heard in that course was, you're not failing because you don't know what to do. You're here because you're smart enough to admit you need help.
That's powerful. So from that, he starts building his systems. The first one he called the Caregiver's Keystone.
Right. Think of it like the central stone in an arch. It holds everything else together. It was a color-coded 3-ring binder, basically the control architecture for Patricia's entire medical life.
So what was actually in it? What made it so effective?
Okay, so 3 critical things. 1, the basic stuff medical summary, doctor contacts. 2, the complete medication list. But, and this is the key part, it included what was discontinued and why.
Oh, that's smart. So a new doctor doesn't accidentally put her back on something that caused a horrible reaction.
Exactly. And the third part was the timeline, a detailed log of when symptoms started, how they progressed, you know, when meds were changed. When he brought this binder to an appointment, the doctor was just focused.
Because it changes the whole dynamic, right? You're not just a panic family member trying to remember things.
You're not. You go from being a worried bystander to an informed advocate. You're presenting objective chronological data. They take you seriously. It makes everything faster, more accurate.
Okay, so that handles the medical chaos. But what about the day-to-day chaos, the confusion, the anxiety in the home?
That's system 2, the cognitive comfort kit. This was all about reducing environmental anxiety. It was a rolling utility cart and, crucially, no drawers.
Why no drawers?
Because for someone with dementia, drawers mean hidden things. It creates confusion. Everything on this cart was visible, accessible, transparent.
So what's on the cart?
3 shelves. Top shelf was for sensory comfort, a soft blanket, a stress ball, lavender lotion, a stuffed animal, things to soothe an immediate panic.
Okay.
Middle shelf was for activities, photo albums, but organized by decade. Simple puzzles, and a CD player with her music, gospel, Motown, jazz.
The things that can still get through.
Yeah.
That nostalgic music is, it's like a backdoor to the brain.
It is. It bypasses the broken short-term memory. And the bottom shelf was practical. A 7-day pill organizer, a laminated daily schedule, and a photo board with family members labeled, which became more and more important.
It sounds like an incredible amount of work, but I guess it's about building layers of safety. So how did he manage all this day to day?
That was the choreography of care. A big whiteboard in the kitchen. His instructor had drilled it into him. Structure reduces anxiety. Routine is safety.
So he just mapped out the entire day.
Yep. Morning, afternoon, evening, night. It tracked meds, activities, hydration. He had a 64-ounce goal. And this last one is so important. It tracked bowel movements.
That feels intensive. I can see some people thinking that's a step too far.
And that's why this next part is so critical. One day, Patricia's in a lot of pain. Sam's first thought is, you know, run to Walgreens, get a laxative.
Quick fix.
The quick fix. But his new guardian instinct, the system, made him pause. He looked at the data on the board and called the nurse, Annie.
And what did she say?
She told him that based on the inconsistent tracking, it sounded like Patricia had a life-threatening fecal impaction. A laxative would have made it worse. She needed emergency medical help.
Wow. So that one piece of low-tech data on a whiteboard.
It literally saved her life. That failure to track consistently for a few days almost killed her. After that, the bowel movement check became the single most non-negotiable item on that list. Structure is safety.
So he's got the practical systems down, but then there's the psychological part,
yeah.
The communication.
Yeah.
He had to completely relearn how to talk to his own wife.
He did. He had to learn the difference between validation therapy and our natural instinct, which is called reality orientation.
Reality orientation is just correcting them, right?
Exactly. Patricia might say, I need to go pick up the children from school. The old Sam would have said, honey, the kids are grown. They left home 20 years ago.
And that just causes a meltdown.
A catastrophic reaction. The brain can't process the truth, so all they feel is failure, fear, confusion. It's incredibly damaging.
Mm-hmm.
Sam had this realization. He said, I wasn't fighting the disease. I was just making her feel bad about having it.
So what's the alternative? How does validation therapy actually work?
You meet them where they are. You validate the emotion, not the fact. So when she's worried about the kids, the caregiver says, oh, the school called. Your neighbor picked them up. They're safe.
So you redirect. You don't correct.
You redirect. You protect dignity, not truth. That became his mantra.
That is such a hard shift to make, though, when you're tired and stressed.
It is. He had to reframe everything. Like, when she kept asking for her car keys, he realized she wasn't asking for keys. She was asking, am I still free? Am I still capable?
So he had to answer the question behind the question.
Yes. And he'd reassure her that she was still all those things. And then he'd redirect that need to go somewhere into a safe walk outside. It was about giving her purpose, too.
Right. The volunteering job at the senior center.
Yes. The center leader, Lorraine, said something amazing to Patricia. She said, you'll remember what it's like to need help. That'll make you better at this than most people.
Giving her permission to be broken but still useful? That's huge.
It was a breakthrough. And they didn't stop living. Just 6 months after the diagnosis, they went on that big South America cruise they'd planned.
Most people would have canceled that immediately. Too risky.
They almost did. But their doctor said, live your life. Make memories while she can still make them. So Sam packed for it like a small military operation. Copies of the Keystone, the comfort kit, and a carry-on. The systems worked, even in a totally new environment.
But even the best systems have a breaking point. The caregiver is the single point of failure.
And Sam hid his. It happened at the grocery store.
He left her alone for just a few minutes.
Maybe 5 minutes, he said. He came back to find her crying, totally lost. She had had a public bowel movement accident in the aisle.
Oh, man.
And in that moment of just overwhelming helplessness and shame, Sam yelled at her, not from anger, but from sheer terror and failure. And someone overheard.
So they didn't see the crisis. They just heard a man yelling at his confused wife.
Exactly. And it led to a formal warning letter from their leasing office. The shame was just intense.
That had to be the bottom.
It was. And it led to two things. First, a promise. Never leave her unattended again, not for 5 minutes. And second, the admission. I'm drowning. I can't do this alone.
So he finally had to build his team.
He had to build his guardian circle. He used Patricia's savings to carefully spend down her assets so she could qualify for Medicaid caregivers. Rosa and Maria came into their lives.
And that changes everything.
Instantly. The load was shared. And the caregivers, they even improved a system. Rosa added a new section to the whiteboard. Today's wins.
Today's wins. I love that.
Instead of just tracking deficits, they started tracking moments of joy. She laughed at a joke on TV. We listened to Motown for 30 minutes. It allowed Sam to stop being just the caregiver.
And go back to being her husband.
Yes. But the journey, of course, moves to its final stages. She's bedridden. They're fighting these awful stage 3 pressure ulcers. And Sam, the systems guy, faces a choice no system can solve.
More comfort or more consciousness.
More morphine, which means less awareness, or less morphine, which means more pain. There's no right answer there. It's just a choice guided by profound love.
And in the end, the nurse, Annie, suggested Patricia might be holding on for you.
And so Sam gave her permission. He just sat with her, held her hand, and said it's okay to go into the light.
Now, this is where the story takes a turn that For a man like Sam must have just completely challenged his worldview.
To its absolute core. After Patricia died, this man of data and hard facts experienced two things he calls impossible evidence.
The first one was sensory.
Totally. He gets back to their empty apartment in Portland after the funeral. The moment he walks in, the entire place is just, I mean, overwhelmingly filled with the smell of Patricia's favorite perfume.
And it wasn't faint.
Not at all. It was powerful. It lasted all day, and then it just vanished. And Sam, the analyst, he interpreted it as a clear signal from her.
Her way of saying she made it home.
My journey is complete. It was his data point for transcendence.
And the second one is even more specific. It involves the technology he spent his life mastering.
Right. He's drafting the manuscript about their story, using an AI writing tool to help organize his thoughts. He hadn't put in any specific details about her burial dress.
Okay.
And the AI, out of nowhere, generates a sentence describing the 20s-style woven neckline of that exact dress, a detail he had never typed, never shared with the machine.
It's impossible.
It's statistically impossible. And Sam's conclusion, from the man who knows how these probability models work, was, Patricia hijacked the machine.
Just to let him know.
Just to tell me, one last time, I'm still here, Sam. We're doing this together.
So he channels all this tactical and emotional knowledge, into a new mission.
A new life's work. He teaches chess to seniors at the center, using his skills to break down complex systems. He teaches mindfulness meditation. And he founded the Guardian series of books.
To give this roadmap, the keystone, the comfort kit, to the 50 million other caregivers out there.
And his philosophy is simple. Practical over utch. Perfect, because your systems have to work when you're exhausted. And community over isolation. Turn that individual vigilance into a collective protection.
So Sam's journey, it shows that you can take something as logical as military strategy and apply it to the most illogical, invisible threat of all, dementia, to create safety and dignity.
But the real tension, the thing that stays with you, is the conflict between his logical engineering brain and that transcendent evidence, the perfume, the AI.
Right. If a man of facts and systems, a former cybersecurity engineer, comes to believe that love can be a signal strong enough to transcend death and even hijack an algorithm, what does that say about the true power of that human bond, the Guardian Circle?
He learned the biggest lesson. He said, the journey never ends. Love doesn't stop at death. It continues. It persists. It finds ways to let you know.
And that's really the thought to leave you with. How do you listen for that signal, even when the noise of grief and exhaustion feels like it's just too much?